This Week in Nuclear, episode number 37, November 20th, 2006. Welcome to the show. This is John Wheeler, and you're listening to This Week in Nuclear. This is a special edition in that we're going to listen to the audio track from the panel discussion that I took part in a week ago at the American Nuclear Society winter meeting in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The panel discussion was on pro-nuclear activism in cyberspace, and the three of us on the panel were Eric McElhane, the primary author of the NEI Nuclear Notes blog, Rod Adams, who has Atomic Insights and the Atomic Show podcast, and myself. Unfortunately, I had to trim it down quite a bit. The panel discussion was about 2 hours in length, and I tried to get the show down to 45 minutes or so. In addition, the audio quality of some of the discussion was not acceptable for broadcasting, so I've had to cut that out. So what you're going to hear first is me discussing This Week in Nuclear and my experience in podcasting the pro-nuclear message, and followed by Rod Adams will share his experiences with Adams Atomic Engines, the Atomic Insights blog, and the Atomic Show podcast. Oh, and if you'd like to follow along with the presentation that I give, you can download a copy of the presentation from my website at thisweekinnuclear.com, so you can look at the slides as you play the podcast.
Our next speaker is John Wheeler. John produces This Week in Nuclear, a podcast that provides news, facts, and commentary on how nuclear energy can help make the world cleaner, safer, and less reliant on fossil fuels. The show has more than 1,100 subscribers from all around the world and has been downloaded more than 18,000 times since the first episode aired in December of 2005. John has more than 20 years of experience in nuclear operations and training, including a 1.5-year assignment with IMPO. He's held senior reactor operator licenses at Indian Point 3 and Turkey Point. John graduated with honors from the United States Merchant Marine Academy in 1984 with a B.S. in Marine Engineering and Nuclear Engineering. He resides in Highland, New York with his daughter, Alexandra, and his other interests include parenting and competing in the sport of triathlon. Well, that's impressive. Let's welcome John.
Thank you, Lisa. What is a podcast? That came up earlier today. A podcast is an audio file that is stored on the internet that you can listen to live, download, or and save on a portable device or burn to a CD-ROM that you can then listen to later, and what we call time shifting. It's similar to a radio show in many cases. In other cases, it may just be commentary, profcasts, which is professors downloading or storing their lectures on digital media and uploading it to the internet for their students. And we even have religious podcasts, which they're calling Godcasts, where people are, preachers are recording their sermons and uploading them to the internet. Let me tell you a little bit about what I'm going to cover today. Is I'm going to give you an overview of This Week in Nuclear, a little bit about how I got started, who's listening to the show, some reactions that I'm getting from the listeners and from the media. I'll give you a quick tutorial about how to get started in doing a podcast. It's easier than it seems. And we are actually doing a demonstration here. We're recording today's session, and Rod and I will be taking the audio file, and we'll probably cut and paste a little bit, but we'll upload it into our respective podcasts. One thing that I would mention is that I'm a podcaster who's learning how to blog, which is a little bit backwards. Rod's been blogging for many years and is also podcasting now. And, you know, I got started in podcasting because, and I'm sure this has happened to you. How many times have you been out in the public or at dinner with friends or family and some topic about nuclear energy has come up? And invariably you talk about how the mainstream media is biased or is misrepresenting a story. And when the people you're speaking with hear the real story, or they hear your perspective of it, they say, well, why doesn't your industry tell people that? Or why don't they share the real message? I must have heard that 100 times over 20 years. And when the opportunity, this new media format of podcasting came out, I just decided, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to try to get the word out there in a different perspective that's not available on the internet. They're going to hear it from me. I'm somebody who's been there and done that. I've operated reactors. I spent 14 years in plant operations at three different locations, two different technologies. And so when I speak, I can speak with experience of having been there. Quickly, podcasting, just like the blog phenomena, podcasting is a phenomena that has really taken off. Podcasting audience will climb to 56 million listeners by 2010. Now, these are statistics that were developed about a year ago, and I would bet that they're probably ahead of that curve already. MP3 ownership, and we focus a lot on MP3 players, and I happen to have an iPod here, but it's a little bit of a misnomer. Podcast comes from the phrase iPod or iPod broadcast, but you don't need an iPod to listen to podcasts. You can listen to them directly on the computer. You can, if you have a TiVo box, TiVo has a podcasting system so that you can subscribe to a podcast and listen to it through the audio on your television set. You can even listen to them on your cell phone. In fact, I recently updated my podcast and made it available via cell phone. So if you have an internet-enabled cell phone, you can go to thisweekinnuclear.com/mobile and you can see the show notes and you can download the audio file. This gives you a little bit of an idea of the growth in podcasting. This is one podcasting service. It's called FeedBurner, and it's one of several. And you can see in FeedBurner, their growth, and I'm not going to go actually into the numbers. You can read them, but it is going almost exponentially. I use a different podcast hosting service. I use one called Podomatic. I selected it because it's very easy to use. It doesn't require any programming skill. All you do is upload the file, type in whatever text that you want embedded into the code of the file, and it does the rest for you. Podomatic claims to be the largest now on the internet with 28,000, but you know you never know because FeedBurner says they have 44,000, so it kind of goes back and forth. But we are talking about large numbers. A typical show format: I try to get out a show every week. Sometimes I'll skip a week or maybe even two if I'm really busy. Other times I'll do two or three shows in a week. Just depends on the amount of free time that I have. I try to capture 7 to 10 of the best news stories that I see out there. I'm really looking for opportunities to share big events in the industry and also to take biased reports in the mainstream media, talk about those, and provide a different perspective. I'm also constantly reinforcing the brand. Emissions-free, economic, safe, the messages of promoting our industry. This is a map that shows the locations of my subscribers. My hosting service allows me to take a look at different snapshots in time, and this is a one-week snapshot in time for my show. You can see I have listeners all over the world. South America, Australia, you can't see New Zealand on there, but there's a few in New Zealand, Asia, China. It's interesting because when I look at these, I can pick up subtleties that tell me what's going on with my listenership. For example, you see there in the middle of China, there was somebody who downloaded 16 shows. Well, that indicates to me there's a new listener. Because if it was somebody who had been subscribing all along, in that one-week time period, I did two shows. So most of those are twos, but a few of them are higher numbers, and that's indicating more people are coming on board. And you can zoom in, and that shows United States or North America. You can see where the different listeners are and how many times they're downloading. I got an email that particular week from a new listener in Louisville, Kentucky. And you can look over and you can see kind of in southern Indiana, northern Kentucky, there's a little arrow that shows you there's a 34. Well, that new listener went out and downloaded all 34 episodes.
You're really popular in Phoenix.
What's that?
You got
73
in Phoenix.
Yeah, obviously there was probably two new listeners in Phoenix. And they each downloaded, 34 shows or so. So who knows, how many there were. But you can actually zoom in and get more detail if you want to do that. But that's the kind of information I can get. But it does demonstrate that this is a phenomena that, who would think that somebody with no broadcasting experience could, in a relatively short period of time, create a pro-nuclear message that was being heard in five continents. And if you take a look at the size of the audience, I have 1,200 regular subscribers, thereabouts, and the show's been downloaded more than 20,000 times since December of this past year. And right now, my rate is about 200 a week, and it keeps climbing. Every week, it's a little bit more, so it's gaining in popularity. So I figured, at 200 downloads, I said 200 downloads a week. I meant to say per day. 200 downloads per day. The shows are about 20 to 30 minutes long. So if you do some simple math, you can see that I'm getting about 300 hours per week of pro-nuclear airtime around the world. So this is my podcasting hosting service. And on the left side of the screen, there are a number of categories. This happens to match the iTunes categories over here. Podcasting really came on the map in June of last year when iTunes, which is a very popular music service hosted by Apple Computer, they made a change to their software which allowed audio files to be attached to something called an RSS feed. And without boring everybody with the details, essentially what that did is it allowed you to subscribe to an audio file in a way that the content would be pushed to you. Whenever there's a new show, it shows up on your computer automatically. You don't have to do anything. In fact, if you use an iPod, and that's one of the reasons it's such a cool device for this kind of content, you go home at night, you plug it in to charge it, and while it's charging, it's going out to see what new episodes have been posted on the podcast that you subscribe to, and over the nighttime, it downloads them. So even if you have a slow internet connection, you can still get podcasts because it all happens over the night. And if it's a slow connection, even if it takes 2 or 3 hours, no big deal. Now, if you're paying for the phone call, that's something to be concerned about. But most of the time, it's a toll-free call. Let's see. Back to this slide. These are the categories. My show happens to be in the news and politics category. And I'm not sure how many shows there are in my category, but I'm either number one or number two, depending on how you look at it, at any given time in Podomatic's news and politics service. I'd also tell you that Podomatic claims to have 28,000 podcasts, and my show is number 35. So it's doing pretty well. Some reactions I've gotten. The Society of Environmental Journalists called me a pro-nuclear but generally thoughtful podcast. And I make no bones about it. I am definitely pro-nuclear, and I'm biased about it. But what I try to do is explain to the listeners why I'm biased and back up my discussions with facts. I've appeared a couple of times on another podcast called The Watt Podcast. It's hosted by a fellow in Canada, and he has panel discussions similar to what we're having today on his show, and it's energy experts from around the world with different areas of expertise. And it's nice to go there and talk because I'm reaching out to listeners who are not necessarily looking for the nuclear message. They're interested in greenhouse gas emissions, global warming, sustainability, energy conservation, And so it gives me an opportunity to get the pro-nuclear message and information out to that audience. This is one example of a comment that was posted on Yahoo Music, which is another one of the music services. And one thing that I would add here, and this just came up within the last couple of days, beginning to get some recognition by traditional sources of media. In fact, last night I got an email that invited me to a press release teleconference this morning with Andy White, the CEO of GE Nuclear Energy, who had a big announcement this morning. Anybody looked at the news, you can see the GE announced a partnership with Hitachi this morning. So I got to participate on a press release conference call with the Wall Street Journal. Who else was there? Platts Energy Digest, a number of other well-known traditional media sources. I was the only one there, though, from the new media, which was kind of cool. Eric showed you a Google search term that we're intercepting anti-nuclear searches. Well, here's my example of that. Anybody heard of Nuclear Week publication? It's a publication by the Nuclear Policy Research Institute, which is a anti-nuclear group. What's that?
Helen Caldicott's one of their board.
Helen Caldicott is on the board. I make a joke about the Nuclear Policy Research Institute. It's an institute that researches anti-nuclear policy. But anyway, if you type in the phrase Nuclear Week, which is their publication, the first two hits are my show. So we're intercepting the anti-nuclear message there as well. This is the website. So if you go to the website, you'll see the front page across the top. That's the podcast. That's the blog. I mentioned I started with podcasting, but I realized that I needed to get into the blogging because there's a different audience. So now what I do is I post my podcast, and I take my show notes or my transcript, and I post that as my blog. And so you can get both of those. So you go to the podcast page. You can see this is a little player window. You can click on the different shows, and you can listen to it right there. Or down here, you can click on them, and you can download the file to MP3 player. On the side here are all the ways you can subscribe. You can subscribe to a text-only transcript. So if you don't have a broadband internet connection, you just want to read the text, and you can subscribe to that. It'll come via email. Or you can subscribe to any of these music services. And I mentioned before, if you have a cell phone, you can get it over your cell phone by going to thisweekinnuclear.com/mobile. And it's a specially formatted web page that downloads very quickly and is designed for a small screen. That's my blog, which is essentially the show notes. And at the bottom of that, there's an opportunity for listeners to log in and make comments about the show. And they've generated some pretty heated discussions about some of the shows. Getting started, the hardware is really pretty easy. Everybody has the hardware, or almost everybody. Any microphone will work, and almost all PCs today come with some kind of microphone, a Mac or a PC. If you want to get a little better sound quality, go out and buy a $20 USB microphone headset. The USB has an advantage as it bypasses the sound card on your PC, and the sound cards on PCs are nice for playing music, but they're not very good for recording. You get a lot of static. So for a few extra dollars, you can get a much better quality recording. The USB goes straight in digital, and so you bypass the analog sound signal. By the way, I will take this presentation, and I'll put it on the website. So later on, if you want information, just go back to the website, thisweekinnuclear.com, and there'll be a link to this presentation, so you can go download it there and get any of these links that I'm talking about today. Software, there's a really nice, good quality, free software package called Audacity, which is sound editing, and that allows you to take the sound file and clean it up and cut out things that you don't want. So if you're recording and the phone rings, or one of the kids wants something and you have to take a break, then you can cut those things out of the show. If you have a Mac, it comes with GarageBand, which is an excellent recording system. You don't have to even go out and get another piece of software. And then there's a piece of software that I just discovered within the last few weeks called Levelator, and it's free, and that's the website for it. And what it does is it'll take the sound signature, and it looks for where there's lows in the volume and there's highs in the volume. Like if you're doing an interview with somebody and they're speaking more softly and you're more loud, or if you splice together different audio files, it looks through that, and it cleans it all up for you, and it levelizes the volume. So it takes away a lot of the manual effort that I used to have to spend in cleaning up the show. And then podcasting service. I mentioned one, but if you do a Google search for podcasting, you'll find tons of services out there. Podomatic, Libsyn. I don't remember which one Rod uses. He can tell you that. Lastly, what else do you need? You need something to talk about. Of course, if you go listen to some of the podcasts, you'll realize they don't really have anything to talk about. But it is good to have something engaging to speak about. Planning, this is how you do it. You sit down, you make some notes, you plan the show, you record the audio, you edit it, and you cut out the unreasonable parts and the silences using that Audacity software they talked about. You mix in any music. I have a little intro. Rod is going to make my intro look sick, though, because he has such a cool intro. I was telling today I was envious, so I'll let you kind of plant the seed there for him. And then you add ID tags, and that's what that does is when somebody plays your sound file in a music player that's like Windows Media. If you ever played music in Windows Media Player, you'll see the title of the song and the author, and if you look into the computer, you can see track number and album. Those are the tags. And so if you do that with the podcast, you'll see This Week in Nuclear, you'll see my name up there, which show number, and things like that. It just makes it easier for people to sort it in their digital music files. Lastly, you save it as an MP3, and then you go to the website, you select it, and you upload it, and you're done. Very simple to do. And then it's broadcast out to iTunes, which is as I said before, it's a music store where there are free downloads of thousands and thousands of podcasts. And if you search for the word nuclear or the word atomic, you'll find the show. Simple as that. And you can also do a Google search for This Week in Nuclear or Nuclear Podcast, and you'll also be able to find the show very easily. Building an audience has been a learning experience. It's not just information. It's got to be entertaining. People got to come back to it. And consistency is important. There have been times when, because of my real paying job or because of life's other pressures, I've taken 2 or 3 weeks off, and I can really see that puts a hit on my listenership. It takes people a while to come back. So I found even if I can only get a 5 or 10 minute show out, it's better than taking a week off. A consistent message. Interviews and discussions with other people are a lot more interesting than just listening to one person speak, and that's something I need to improve upon, because most of my shows are really news related with me speaking, and I've had a couple where there were other things mixed in. I had one where I took the sound file off of an old movie and talked about that, and Eric mentioned David Bradish from NEI. Had David Bradish on once for a discussion about the economics, and we were also debunking some anti-nuclear propaganda on that show. And some other resources, PodSafe Music Network is a really neat resource. Even if you don't do podcasts, I recommend going to PodSafe Music, because what it is artists, music artists from around the world who are trying to have their music discovered, go there and publish their music. And it's free, and it's royalty free. So you can go there, you can download it, they want to share it, and that's where I got the front-end music for my podcast. But you can go there and you can search for music by the type of music, by keyword. It's really a neat service that they offer, and if you're, whatever music you like to listen to, you can find thousands of songs, files there to download. And then I also have a podcasting tips page on my website that I've just started to put together, getting into the hardware, a little more detail, some other advanced techniques, Also, if you want more information, feel free to email me. And my email address and the link is also on the website. Now, that's the podcasting tips page there. All right. Thanks for the time, and I'll turn it back over to Lisa.
Thanks, John. Be sure to keep track of your questions. Our next panelist is Rod Adams. Rod has been fascinated with energy production systems since he was a young teenager when he realized that the Arab oil embargo, you're showing your age, Rod, was a threat to his future driving enjoyment. In addition to that external influence, his father was an electrical engineer who thought that substations were cool enough to use as backgrounds for family vacation pictures. Rod graduated with distinction from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1981 with a B.S. in English. Despite his liberal arts degree, Admiral Rickover accepted him into nuclear power training. He served as a junior officer on board USS Stonewall Jackson and as engineer officer on board USS Von Steuben. He also earned an MS in systems technology from the Naval Postgraduate School. His energy interest areas have included large storage batteries, hydrogen generators, diesel engines, gas turbines, wind propulsion, solar thermal, and nuclear fission. He left active duty, joined the Naval Reserves, and founded Adams Atomic Engines, Incorporated, in 1993 to design and market nuclear-powered gas turbines. The company published its first website in 1995 with the help of Dr. Sam Bilbao Leon, who's back there, and has maintained a presence on the Internet ever since. Rod was recalled to active duty in 1999 and currently is serving on the staff of the Chief of Naval Personnel as a training program requirements officer. He's recently served as an instructor in systems engineering at the U.S. Naval Academy and on the staff of the Secretary of the Navy, specializing in enterprise information systems. Adams Atomic Engines, Incorporated continues its development in web-based marketing efforts. The company's publications include Atomic Insights, the Atomic Insights blog, and the Atomic Show, hosted by the Podcast Network. His outdoor hobbies include swimming, bicycling, running, paddling, kayaks and canoes, sailing, hiking, and windsurfing. And he podcasts those, right? He has been married more than 25 years and has two adult daughters. Let's welcome Rod.
Today, something that we need, something safe and clean. Well, if you're searching, you can find the answer right before your eyes. It's atomic. It's atomic. There's no need to fear. We gotta let the whole world hear. It's atomic. It's atomic.
Repetition is important.
It's atomic.
And now here's Rod Adams and Shane Brown with The Atomic Show.
It's atomic. It's atomic.
Okay. Well, actually, Shane's not here, although he does live in Albuquerque. I'll get to that in a few minutes. But what I want to talk to you about is capturing the message. You've heard a lot of discussion about the blogs and podcasts, and Eric talked a lot about how the NEI Nuclear Notes blog was successful in capturing the message. But one of the things that I've heard so many times since I've been a nuke, or since I've even been interested in finding out about nuclear power, is people who blame the media. You know, people have said a lot about this industry that, man, we would have had a great time. We would still be building plants if it wasn't for those media people. The media is the people that told others not to trust us. The media is, you know, the reason that we had such problems. Well, first of all, I don't really believe that. There's many, many other things to think about when you think about what happened is we started building plants really fast and then we stopped building plants. But in today's world, you don't need to blame the media. You should become the media. One of the things that is well recognized by any professional is that the media is a terrible source of information about their own profession. But for some reason, most of us do still go to the newspaper and seem to believe a little bit about what it tells you about other people's professions. I was once a member of a Rotary Club, and we did that survey. And anybody who's ever been in Rotary knows that Rotary is a very special organization that only allows one or two people from each profession within a town to be a member of the club. So you have a wide range of different professions, and every one of the people in that club said the media is the worst source of information about their profession. Okay? So with today's publishing tools, and Eric talked a little bit about it, and John talked about how easy it is to begin sharing your message. And one of the things that I found in being a blogger, looking at websites, reading websites, and then getting involved in podcasting, is that there are some things that people really respect out there in the cyberspace world. They respect someone who knows what they're talking about and delivers their message with some passion, which shows that they really care about what they're saying, and they care enough to keep coming back and answering questions. They care enough to defend their positions. They care enough that if they really do make a mistake, that they come back and admit that mistake and say, you know, hey, I learned something too today. Okay? Working to build an audience. I've been working for a long time to build an audience for people who understand that there is an option with nuclear power besides 1,000 megawatt central station electrical power plants. Okay? You heard that I started off my nuclear career, got my nuclear training as a ship propulsion engineer. Y'all heard me ask a question about that. Ship propulsion was the first use of nuclear power in the United States and in the world, actually. The first operating power reactor was a ship propulsion prototype called the S1W. Okay? So I've been working to build that audience for a long time. SAMA helped me put my website out in 1995. I'd started writing a paper publication called Atomic Insights, and she said, hey, Rod, this would be a great thing to put as a website. I said, I don't know anything about a website. What's a website? But she was a college student, so at that time they knew more than the rest of us. Okay. So I've been working for a long time, and one of the things there's a neat thing about the web. Not only is it immediate, and Eric talked about how timely you can be, but it's also a long-term history, okay? If you write stuff that really has some staying power, people will keep coming back and reading it. Some of my most popular articles on my website are articles that I wrote back in 1996, okay? And people keep coming back. It's important to date your articles to make sure that people don't think that it's new information. But I have an article where I discuss the accident SL1, which if you go search SL1 accident, you'll find that Atomic Insights comes up one or two at Google. Okay, there's all kinds of those that I wrote a long time ago. But having built that audience and that network made it a lot easier to keep building on the blog and the podcast. Okay. Use and adapt the available tools. There's the web has got some great stuff. You can put audio, video, search, the blogs. We've talked about some basic HTML. You need to learn a little bit of code, okay? If you don't know how to do href equals and quotes to put a link in, you really should learn how to do that, okay? There's a few other things. You might need to want to use italics or bold or those kind of things to set off your message a little bit. When you're on the web, practice, okay? You don't have to practice by having your own blog. You can get involved in other people's discussions. You can go to the NEI Nuclear Notes and read the articles there and make a few comments. Listen if somebody responds to your comment, okay? That helps you develop and find your own voice. And the next thing I really hope that you do is most engineers are not particularly fluent writers, okay? Practice that skill. It is a craft. It's something you can develop. You can become better at it. And use the other tools on your computer like spell checkers and those kind of things, okay? Because although there is no measure of credibility on the web, like any other interaction between people, it's pretty easy to start realizing who knows what they're doing and is kind of professional and takes things seriously, and those who are out there flaming and just making noise. Okay. You can start your own blog or website pretty easily. Eric talked about how easy it is to start a blog or website. One of the things I would suggest that you do, the first thing you do when you start your blog or website is when they have the place to put links in, put in Atomic Insights. That's atomicinsights.com, okay? Or atomicinsights.blogspot.com. The next thing you do is put in Nuclear Notes. But, yeah. Okay, write regularly or irregularly, okay? It's important to be, you know, one of the things about this media is you don't have to follow a schedule, okay? The mainstream media is locked into many things that merely many paradigms that have been overcome by the internet. You don't have to put out a daily issue. You don't have a deadline. You don't have a maximum amount of space. One of the things that many of us get very frustrated with about news articles is that you read the news article and say, well, they left out this, they left out that, or they didn't talk about this. And if you've ever done any journalism at all, you'll find out that the cutting tool is very important, okay? When you have a space on a newspaper, you're plus or minus three words, okay, to fit in that space. So you got to be very careful, and the news is limited by that. On a blog, if you want to go on about something, go ahead. Write a long blog post. If you want to write two or three words, do that too, okay? Again, I want to emphasize, use the shift key spell checkers and grammar checkers, all right? Be concise. That doesn't mean you have to, again, you don't have to be, you know, artificially limit your message. Say what you need to say, and if it takes a page or two, that's okay. Understand the conventions. Read and listen to other, if you want to do podcasting like John does, listen to others. I started listening to podcasts probably 6 or 8 months before I started doing one, yet I've been doing a podcast now for almost 8 months. So I've been listening to this media for a long time. To me, it was a godsend. Okay, I live in Annapolis, Maryland. I work in Washington, D.C., and I'm also still in the Navy and have to do the PRT every, you know, 6 months. So I still have to run and cycle and all that stuff to keep myself in shape. So I had plenty of opportunity to have my ears filled with something, and I got really tired of listening to commercials and all that other stuff. So I started off listening to NPR, shifting NPR radio shows. They have some great shows to do some great audio work, and shifting those to a time when I was driving. Because for some odd reason, the most popular shows are not on at 5 o'clock in the morning. I don't understand why. But that's what time I was going to work, because that's the only way you can get there without going crazy with traffic. All right. Give respect to get respect. Okay, that's just a standard thing about human communication. Okay, if you really want to get respect on the web, you got to treat the other people who are posting and realize that they really care about their message. Okay, calling somebody an idiot is probably not going to win you friends, either way. Okay, use care when you're talking acronyms and technical jargon. That's something that most engineers, most members of any profession, have something you got to be watching out for. Some of the times that you see something that is an acronym, you think of it as a word and begin using it. I'm in the profession that is the most guilty of that. Okay, we have a whole organization that comes up with acronyms. I think every day they change them, and it's terrible. But anyway, be careful with acronyms, and they don't always mean the same to you as they do to somebody else. Okay? And also, be aware that when you are publishing on the web, you are potentially talking to the world. Okay? So recognize that there is a global audience, there are people who have other interests, and that you just need to be aware of your audience, who can be there. And John showed his Frapper map. Mine is fairly similar, although because of the organization that I podcast with, I have a really strong concentration in Australia also. Okay? What this podcasting, blogging, websites has done is allowed to get a lot of word-of-mouth networking, a lot of people who are engaged, and there's a very strong niches in the marketplace. Okay, energy itself is a fairly large topic, and it, of course, it got really interesting in the energy world starting post-Katrina, and people started to get really interested about what's happening with prices and supply and all that stuff. And there's a lot of good energy-related blogs and websites. And, of course, I participate in those discussions on a regular basis and try to get people to be interested in what I have to say. Who knows what the word metadata means? What's a good definition of metadata?
Data about data.
Okay, data about data. One of the things that, you know, any audio file is a data file, right? But audio files are difficult to search because search engines can't listen. They just read. So if you want to have your podcast or an audio or a video file found, you have to tag it. You have to add text to it so that the search engine can find it. And with metadata, it is many times formatted. So you can put an author, subject, and all that stuff so that if somebody wants to look with a very specialized search, they can find you better. So it's important to think about that. And sometimes other blogs help provide you with the metadata because when they link to you, the words they use to describe your link become part of the metadata associated with that. My blog and podcast don't cost me anything. Matter of fact, I actually make just enough money to pay for the hosting of my websites and stuff. That's all. But that's good enough for me because I keep it a revenue-neutral event. So we have advertising support. It's really easy to get advertising support. You don't need a salesperson. You can use something like Google AdSense or Yahoo's got a service now, and I think MSN does also. And what those are is simply services that read your message and try to put in context-sensitive links. And it's very easy to set up. It took about 20 minutes, and I get a check once every 2 or 3 months. So you can, if you have a really good message, you become a professional at it and do something that people really want to hear, or you have some really good inside information that you don't want to share with everybody, you can get people to subscribe and pay for it. But mainly, blogs, podcasts, and everything is a way to share your information with the world, and you can't really expect to make a lot of money at it. Video is becoming really interesting because the bandwidth capabilities is growing for many people. Again, I know that in this audience, and I've heard this in other places, bandwidth is not as widespread as some in the mainstream like to think, okay? Because in the big city, you can get bandwidth pretty easy. In the suburbs, you can get high bandwidth pretty easily. I've actually got two options now. I've got a 5 megabit per second cable connection. If I want, I can go up to 15 megabits a second with a fiber optic telephone connection. But not everybody's got that. So be careful if you want to do the video stuff. Okay? If you have high-speed connectivity available to you, you can now create the network you want to see. So you can create a network, and you can help add the videos to it. You can help other people link together, and through subscriptions and RSS and stuff, deliver a network presentation. Interesting thing to think about for a corporation that wants to deliver training videos and that kind of stuff. Good ways for universities and nonprofits, okay, get your message out. Again, in the ANS world, there's a lot of people, a lot of university interest, a lot of folks that have access to the tools. If you do start doing the blogging, podcasting, put in This Week in Nuclear, NEI Nuclear Notes, Atomic Insights, and start building those links in that Google Juice. Okay? All right. So we talked a little about this stuff. That's mostly done. Here's my URLs right now. The second to last one is a little thing that I don't update very often, but I started off saying that there is at least one atomic-powered cycle in the world, and that's mine because I call myself atomic sometimes. So, all right. Any questions? See, I get to beat by going last. You're going to introduce the questions?
I was actually going to change our setup. Let's thank Rod first.
Well, there you have it, the Pro-Nuclear Activism in Cyberspace panel discussion from the American Nuclear Society meeting in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hope you enjoyed this special episode of This Week in Nuclear. This is John Wheeler. Have a safe and happy week.